Warning, the following podcast may prove to be informative and educational, but it is guaranteed to be entertaining. Welcome to Trivial Warfare, the podcast that takes the pub quiz out of the pub and brings it home to you. Now here's your host, Jonathan Oakes.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Trivial Warfare. We are the podcast that takes the pub quiz out of the pub and brings it home to you. My name's Jonathan. Today I am here with Chris.
Hello, Jonathan.
Hello, Chris. I'm here with Carmella.
Hello, boys.
Hello, Carmella. And today we have a special guest. We are here with Rand Levy from the Curious Minds podcast. Hey, Rand.
Woohoo! Hey, guys. Hello from over the ocean.
Not just the ocean.
Half a world around.
Yeah, right? You're over the ocean. You're over the Mediterranean. You're all the way over in Israel.
Yes, I am. Well, half a world away.
We're glad that you're joining us.
Is he our furthest guest?
No.
Okay.
Jeff Jones joined us from Taipei, Taiwan.
Right. I forgot all about that. That's right. Okay. But he's a close second.
He's a second?
Yes.
Taipei and Israel are not close.
Depends on which part of the world you're traveling from.
So, Rand, tell us. Well, I've already talked to our guys about your show before. I've done a promotion for you before. So, Curious Minds is a podcast about history, technology, science. Why don't you tell my listeners a little bit about your show?
Thanks. So, yeah, I mean, I've been podcasting since 2007, but I've been podcasting in Hebrew in Israel. And my show, my Israeli show, which is going strong now for the last 9 years, is also the most popular show in Israel. And it's about science, technology, and history. So about half a year ago, something in the vicinity, I started an English podcast for the U.S. audience. It's called, as you said, Curious Minds. And I handle all kinds of topics. The variety, I guess, is all over the place. I did a series of episodes on the history of LSD and on genetics and Stuxnet, the malware that's tracked the Iranian nuclear facilities. And you can see that it takes the whole gamut, right? So it's very in-depth and it tackles many, many topics. So it's great fun.
It's a very smart show. And by the way, guys, when he says it's the top podcast in Israel, literally, if you go over and switch your iTunes to the settings, you can go to the bottom. On the bottom right, there's a little flag icon, and you can change it to a different country. If you go to the Israel page, it is literally the number one podcast in the country.
Very impressive and well-deserved.
So. Yeah, I mean, it's like being a big fish in a very, very small pond, right?
So you don't give yourself enough credit.
But it's a rather successful show, even in global scale, I think.
Absolutely. That's great. Mm-hmm. So now, interesting, when we were waiting for you, a little peek behind the curtain, we were trying to get started, and Chris said, well, you know, Jonathan, he's in Israel, so, I mean, it's a war zone over there. You never know. And I stopped and said, I don't think it's really a war zone. I mean, there are some rocket attacks, and so it made both of us realize, you know, we really don't know much about what it must be like living in Israel. At a high level, what is it like living in Israel? Can you compare it to anything for us?
Hot.
Oh, so it's like living in Florida.
Yes.
It sounds very similar to Florida then.
Yeah, I mean, the weather is more, it's comparable to Florida, maybe California. The country itself is very, it's very, very advanced. I mean, technology and it's an advanced democracy. So it's not that different from what you get from in Europe and the U.S., but yes, in terms of being a war zone, I mean, us Israelis, we tend to take this for granted because that's the reality of life. But in the past 10 years, I've personally endured three rocket attacks, rockets falling around my house. In Israel, you don't think about it as being that out of the ordinary. Human beings are very adaptive creatures, right? We tend to assume that if something has been going on for many, many years, that it's normal in some weird way.
Right.
But yes, 2 years ago, the latest conflict with Gaza, I had rockets falling, half a mile away from my house.
Wow.
Not fun. But you forget. You it's amazing how fast you forget, you get used to these kinds of things. So you don't think about them on a daily level.
You know what's interesting?
It's interesting psychologically, I think.
The way you're describing it, it sounds like the way that our Midwesterners deal with tornadoes or feel about tornadoes.
Yeah.
It's not happening regularly. It's not happening all the time. But every once in a while, they know that there will be a tornado in the vicinity. It may be a mile away. It may be 5 miles away. But it's a risk that you live with.
And after a while, you start thinking, well, tornadoes are a kind of fact of life. You don't really think about, maybe I'll move to a different state where the weather is different. I mean, you live in a certain state. That's the weather, what it's like.
Yeah.
In Israel, you think, okay, so there's going to be rockets once in a while.
Yeah. It's cloudy with a chance of rockets.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, that's interesting. You know, I'm really glad we talked about that. That is really interesting. I've never really thought of it because we're very myopic over here.
You
visited the U.S. I think more than once, at least once.
Yes.
So you kind of have a sense of what we're like over here. Most of us are not thinking about what it's like in other countries. So it's always great to get a better feel for that. Now, Chris.
Yes, sir.
I do believe.
Yes.
That it's time to warm it up.
What up, Chris?
Wow.
You just kind of like kill time.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jonathan Oakes, king of transitions.
It's a good segue.
Wow. Man, if there's somebody that could do a good segue, it's Jonathan Oakes. That's right.
I could have said.
Make sure you take notes for your next podcast, all right?
I could have said, speaking of rockets, I could have done that. But
that would have been terrible.
That's exactly. Exactly.
My goodness. Okay. So a couple episodes ago, I introduced a Warm It Up Chris question from a listener by the name of Brianna Garten. Brianna was very, very nice enough to give us like 3 pages of the same quiz. And so what we're doing is the second page of the quiz. We did the first page the first time around. Now we're going to do the second one. And so, lady and gentlemen, what we're going to do is I'm going to give you a fake or real scenario of diseases or disorders. And you are to determine, is it fake or is it real?
So you're going to give us a name, and we're going to say fake or real.
That's correct, yes. And so we're going to go around robin. All right, so Rand, since you're our guest, I'm going to start with you first, okay? And
okay.
The disease possibly is called ataxia telangiectasia. Say that 3 times fast.
That's a tongue twister. So
is it a real disease or fake
disease? The first word is kind of familiar. I'm guessing that it's part of something that is maybe real, but I'm pretty sure I've never heard the complete name of such a disease. So I'm going to go with fake.
All right. The answer is real. It's a rare neurodegenerative disease causing severe disability, refers to poor coordination and small dilation blood vessels.
Dilated blood vessels. Come on, man. Everybody knows that's real. How'd you miss that?
I'm just giving you guys a head start.
Luckily, these questions are just warming us up. They don't actually count in the score.
That's right. All right. So, Jonathan, do you want me to you want the next question, or would you like me to refer to Carmella?
Oh, I want it.
All right.
You know, I want everything.
Jonathan, sexomia.
Sexomia?
Yes.
Carmella wants that
Excuse
one.
Me. I'm sorry. Sexomnia. Sexomnia. Oh,
excuse me.
No, I'll take that one now. Okay.
Wow.
Sexsomnia?
Yes, sexsomnia.
How do you spell?
Sexsomnia.
Exactly the way it sounds.
Exactly right.
So insomnia is the inability to sleep. Sexsomnia would be like the inability to go to sleep without having sex? This sounds like a plot from a sitcom. I'm going to say it's fake.
It is real.
Oh, no.
Is it when you have sex while you're asleep?
It's a sleep disorder that is similar to sleepwalking, compels the sufferer to engage in sexual activity while asleep.
Are you serious?
Yes, sir.
Actually,
wow.
I've researched the same disease and for an episode I did on sleep disorders, and I came across a very strange and real case in Australia where a woman would, while sleeping, go out of the house. I mean, she would sleep next to her husband. She would go out of the bed, go out, drive to nightclubs, etc., go out with men, sleep with them, come back to sleep in her house, and be totally unaware of what happened.
Wow.
And that is a true medical case that I've read about.
How did she slept, drove, danced, sexed, and slept? Seriously?
That's what the medical journal claimed.
That feels like we're dealing with some gullible doctors. It's like, honey, I promise I know nothing about it.
Oh, goodness. Okay. Carmela, yours is Groat's disease, Groat's disease, Groat's disease.
Well, the last two were real.
Oh, jeez.
Game theory.
Not game theory.
I've also never heard of Groat's disease, but that doesn't mean anything. I'm just going to say it's fake.
It is fake. It's from Curb Your Enthusiasm, a neurological disorder presumed to have a high mortality rate and slow, painful process. It sparked a viral campaign in Springboro, Ohio, every March 21st to raise money for this fake disease.
Wow.
So, all right. So, Rand, your next one is turtle pox. Turtle pox.
Wow. Man.
He's like, why couldn't I get sexomnia?
Like, I knew that one.
Turtle pox. I mean, is it like smallpox for turtles? do turtles get
turtle-shaped pox?
I would go with fake again.
Fake is absolutely correct. It's from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It's a disease that turtles suffer from in the comic book Making of Metalhead.
That's amazing.
So
that's amazing.
So, Jonathan, are you ready for yours?
I am.
Spattergoit.
Spattergoit.
Yes, spattergoit.
I've heard this term before. Spattergoit. Problem is, I don't know if I heard it in a fictional thing or a real thing. I've heard this term before. I'm gonna say it's real, but if it is fake, I want to know where it came from.
All right. Carmella, is it real or fake?
That's fake. That's what Ron Weasley had, or supposedly had.
Oh, man.
I'm appropriately dressed for today.
Oh, man. Oh, no. I hope we didn't hurt Rand's ears on that one, because, man, that got loud.
I knew I had heard that before.
As I'm like, is that the thing that Ron Weasley had?
Yeah, I had to set it up to make sure that you did not have that question, Carmella.
Oh, man.
Okay, so, Carmella.
Yes.
Fragile X syndrome.
Fragile X syndrome.
Yes.
That sounds real.
Real is absolutely correct. Nearly all who have this meet criteria for autism. Genetic syndrome that causes intellectual disabilities in boys. Physical features include elongated face, large or protruding ears, large testicles, and stereotypical movements such as arm flapping.
That's so, actually something that you test for in DNA cases. DNA tests for while pregnant in Israel. I don't know how it's in the States, but people do test.
That's probably where I remember it from.
Can they do something about it if they discover it prenatally?
No.
So Rand, your next one is fatal familia insomnia. Fatal familia insomnia.
Is it fatal or fetal?
Fatal.
Let's see. Fatal and insomnia. I'm familiar with familia. people going to sleep with their families and they're dying some sort. I would go with, three times in a row, fake.
It is real.
Oh.
Extremely rare inherited prion of the brain. Onset around 50 causes plaque in the brain that leads to anxiety, hallucinations, and eventually complete inability to sleep. Death follows usually within a few months. No known cure.
Well, that was depressing.
Thank you. I'm here to bring the thunder.
So now Rand is 1 out of 3. I'm 0 for 2. I need to get this right to at least tie Rand.
I've gotten all mine right.
And Carmella. And Carmella's not only got all hers right, but she got one of yours right.
I don't need this from you, Chris.
All right. Jonathan, yours is foreign accent syndrome. also known as FAS.
Oh, you don't say.
Wow.
Foreign accent syndrome?
Yes.
This, oh my God.
Do you want some help?
Now, hold on, this is real.
He's resorted to praying.
No, this is real. This is real. Okay, so I've heard of cases where somebody who had a physical trauma to the brain, when they came out of their coma, they spoke with a different accent as if they were from a different country. I've heard about that happening. So I say this is real.
It is real.
Yeah.
I was going to say, if you don't get it right, I'm going to be mad at you.
FAS is a speech disorder that causes a sudden change in speech pattern and pronunciation so that the victim is perceived to be speaking with a foreign accent secondary to severe brain trauma or stroke.
Nice. I even got the cause right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So maybe I'll do have an American accent one day.
Well, I hope you don't have a brain trauma to get it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
He's wondering, is it worth it? Hmm.
It's not, trust me.
It's not.
My podcasting career in the States, right?
All right. So, Carmela, your last one
You could change the title of your show. Curious and Slightly Damaged Mind.
All right, so Carmela, your last one is Atlantis Complex.
I'm going to say, the last two were real.
Actually, I've been mixing them up since you started playing Game Theory.
Oh.
Jerk.
There's still Game Theory involved.
Yeah. I'm going to say it's real.
Ladies and gentlemen, she is not perfect. It is fake. It's from
Owen Kolf, or whatever his name is.
Psychosis, common in guilt-ridden fairies. Contracted by Artemis by dabbling in fairy magic. Symptoms include paranoia, obsessive-compulsive disorder, multiple personality disorder.
Wow.
And with that fun stuff, ladies and gentlemen, that is your warming up Chris question of the episode.
Good job, Chris, and good job, Brianna. You did a really bang up job with those warming up Chris questions.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I really appreciate that. So if she wants to do that again, I'll be more than happy to read them out. So
awesome. All right, guys, it's time to start the game.
Time to play the game.
Here's how it works. Our game is 6 rounds long, 3 questions per round, and each question is worth 10 points. There will be a midpoint question after round 3 that's worth 20 points, and when we get to the final question at the end of the game, you will be able to wager any or all of what you've earned throughout the game. If you're playing along at home, you can pause the game after each question to give yourself a chance to think about it and answer before listening to us. All right, guys. Let's get started. All right, so the game is going to be Chris and Ran against Jonathan. And I got to tell you, Carmela's asking the questions. After the last episode and some of the previous episodes, my confidence is waning. I feel like Ran plus Chris. Ran is obviously intelligent and very much so in the factual, the history realm, the science realm, all the things that Chris is terrible at. And Chris is fantastic.
Yet I know nothing of U.S. culture. So.
And Chris is fantastic in pop culture, which Ran knows nothing about.
Okay.
So between the two of them, they might get a perfect score.
Yeah, but in all fairness, Carmela hasn't really asked that many pop culture questions in a long time.
Oh, you do her a disservice. She has gone out of her way to add more for you.
Well, we'll find out in this episode. We'll
see what happens. But exactly. But I will say we're slowly taking Jonathan down.
You really are.
Oh man, we are so disrupting his confidence right now.
All right, let's get into round one. Category is science.
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 Who wrote Principia Mathematica?
Locked in.
Okay, Rand, do you have any ideas? So, because this is science, and this is, as Jonathan so eloquently said just a few moments ago, not my strong suit.
I actually said you know nothing.
So this is one of the most famous books in science history. It is actually Isaac Newton's famous book from 16th century, I think. And it probably the first real scientific book. It opened up the new science era.
So he says, Isaac Newton, do you agree with him?
Absolutely. Especially because Jonathan's like nodding yes the whole way through. And it's just like, yes. So thanks for that, Jonathan. Appreciate it.
I agree. The answer is definitely Isaac Newton.
Sir Isaac Newton.
Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
That question was right up my alley.
Had to make sure I got at least one.
See, that's the kind of question when I play Chris by himself that I feel like I can make ground up.
Well, usually I'm taking a guess at that point in time.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
All right. Your next category is in television.
Televisiones.
Rick Grimes is a character in the television show The Walking Dead.
Oh, darn it.
What is his son's name?
Wow. She just took us for a walk on that one.
I was so proud of myself.
You were getting ready
when
to
she
walk.
Said Rick Grimes. I'm like, I think that's the guy on The Walking Dead. And I was about to write that down. I have no idea what his kid's name is. Like Bart. You know, Bart, don't.
I actually haven't watched any television series for probably the last 5 or 6 years. So even Game of Thrones, which I did an episode on in my podcast, I didn't watch it. I read the
the books?
The condensed version also.
You read the condensed
version. So, Chris, I'll give you the honor with that one.
You and me both, buddy. Let me tell you, I haven't watched any of them either.
What name will Jonathan make up?
I know.
I just want a first name. You know, you can't say Grimes.
No. Darn. Oh, let me cross that out.
Darn. What would Rick name his kid? Biff. Biff Grimes. Gary Grimes. Okay, I have written my answer.
Okay, so Rand, the problem is that after that wonderful introduction that Jonathan said about me knowing pop culture, the one thing I don't know is I do not know The Walking Dead because I'm not a zombie fan.
And you're a Robert Kirkman guy.
I love Robert Kirkman, but I could not get into his comic book to save my life. Robert Kirkman does a couple really neat comics called East to West and Invincible, which I absolutely love. And unfortunately, he is the creator and guru of all things Walking Dead that I am not familiar with because I'm not a zombie guy. And so what's so funny is I kidded around about famous actor Scott Grimes, even though I can't remember what anything he was in. But but Scott keeps coming into my head.
You're gonna go with Scott?
I'm going to say Scott Grimes.
You should have gone with Newton.
Oh, that's yeah.
Newton Grimes.
All right. I said Elvis. Elvis Grimes.
So, before I give you the answer, I wrote in the group last night that I was writing questions, and I wrote the answer in such a way that made me laugh.
This was the one?
This was the one.
I saw that out there.
So, Rick Grimes is played by a guy named Andrew Lincoln, who's British, but the show is set in Georgia. So he's supposed to have a southern accent. So the way he says his son's name is really funny to me, so I wrote it as Carl. His name's Carl.
Carl.
Carl. Knew it.
Dang it, Carl.
I knew it. I knew that answer, dadgummit. Ugh, that stinks.
All right.
Stupid Scott Grimes.
All right. Your next question is in history.
All right.
Okay.
There have been 68 appointed secretaries of state for the United States. Who was the Secretary of State from 1993 to 1997?
I think I know that one.
Okay.
You said 93 to 97?
93 to 97.
I've got two names going through my head, and one of them could be right, and the other one could make me sound foolish. But the one that could make me sound foolish is the one that I'm leaning towards, and now I'm feeling foolish as a result.
Go with the foolish one.
I think I'm going to go with the non-foolish one, actually. And I'm hoping for the best here. I'm locked in.
Okay. So this was Clinton's presidency, and so, Rand, what were you thinking?
I was thinking about if it was Clinton's presidency, so I must be mistaken, because I was thinking about George Bush Senior's presidency, and his Secretary of State was, I think it was James Baker.
Yeah, that's right.
But you're saying, I mean, you're positive that was Clinton's presidency?
Yeah, I'm 100% positive that was Clinton's presidency because he was elected in 92, and then January 20th, 1993 is when he was elected.
Okay, so who was the Secretary of State for Clinton?
Yeah, that's the rub of the matter right now. I'm trying to think if it was anybody that ran in 2000.
It was Madeleine Albright.
Madeleine Albright?
Maybe. Bush Jr., maybe?
No, Bush Jr.'s was Colin Powell, and then later on it was Condoleezza Rice.
Ah, right. So it's got to be Madeleine Albright.
I think you're right. I would like that answer. So if you're good with it, let's lock it in.
Okay, go for it.
Madeleine Albright, locked in.
All right, Jonathan?
So the name that I felt would make me foolish, because I wasn't really sure if the person was ever Secretary of State, but the name was coming to my head, was James Baker.
Okay.
So that was the foolish one. The one that I thought was less right but less foolish was Madeleine Albright. So that's what I said. I will show Chris.
So we're both right, though, both right.
I trust you.
Third name down on the right, left-hand side.
I trust you anyway, but...
So Madeleine Albright was the Secretary of State from 1998 to 2001.
Is it Janet Reno?
No, Janet Reno was the attorney.
Attorney General.
Secretary of State from 93 to 97 was Warren Christopher.
Oh, man.
Oh, I've never heard of Warren
Remember
Christopher.
I know what he looks like. I remember his face, but man, that stunk.
So after the first round, it is a tie, 10 to 10.
All right.
So first category in the next round is going to be in literature.
Literature?
Within two... How many books did L. Frank Baum write about the Land of Oz?
Oh, wow.
Within two?
Within two.
Does the HBO series count?
No. Books that L. Frank Baum actually
Just
wrote
checking. It's good to know.
It's
a little different from the HBO series.
It had Oz in it, all right?
Wow.
So I'm working some game theory to get my answer. I'll tell you how in a second. I'm locked in.
Okay. So, Rand, I know a couple weeks ago I was in Barnes & Noble, a bookstore around here, and I saw that they had Wizard of Oz books on the sales rack. And I was intrigued because I really only thought there was like one or two of them. I didn't realize how many of them there were. And I remember seeing that they had two volumes that had three books in each of them. And so obviously it was a total of six books. Do you happen to know anything else besides that?
I was thinking there might be three books, but I have really no idea, so I'll go with your answer, Chris.
Okay. I want to go with eight. And the reason why I want to go with eight is just in case it goes to 10, but I know I saw six. And so it kind of covers
that's
that.
That's smart.
Anytime that somebody, especially in trivia, says within a certain reach, I don't want to get it right. I want to get it in that range. And so just to cover my backside, I'd like to say eight.
The engineer in me agrees.
Okay. So eight is our final answer.
All right.
So my little bit of game theory is that typically if somebody wants something within one, it's a smaller number.
Mm-hmm.
And if they want something within 10, then you know your answer is going to be hundreds. When somebody wants something within two, it typically seems like it would be somewhere in the neighborhood of 7 to 15-ish, right? So I was just based on that and what little I know about the Wizard of Oz, I said eight.
Wow. My goodness. We had around the same thought process, but two different ways of doing it.
Yeah.
So there are a total of 14 books that he wrote about the Wizard of Oz.
I felt like if I missed it, it was going to be because it was more.
Yeah.
Between 7 and 15, yeah. Remember?
So now you know.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun,
and
dun.
And some of them are like really,
dark.
Really weird.
Well, and also like, some of them are
And I read H.P. Lovecraft, and some of L. Frank Baum's books are really weird.
And some of them are very short, too. They're not very long books. They're only like 60 to 80 pages. I mean, they're almost like pamphlets.
Yeah, well, the one of them was only like one line long. It said, "There are munchkins. They died." And that was the whole book.
Wow, interesting. Didn't know that.
No, I made that up there.
Oh, okay.
Hey, Chris, it says gullible on the ceiling.
What? Where? I don't see it.
Your next category is in music.
Music!
What famous actress was pulled on stage during Bruce Springsteen's Dancing in the Dark video before she was famous?
3, 2, 1.
Randy, you trust me?
Yeah.
Okay. Go for it. So, all right, count us down.
3, 2, 1.
Courtney Cox.
It is Courtney Cox.
From Friends?
From Friends. Really?
Yes, from Friends, yes. And she's no longer Courtney Cox Arquette because they got divorced.
She's back to Courtney Cox.
That's right.
So what's the story? I mean, she was a dancer for Quills.
It was literally in the music video. The whole theme was that he's sitting there rocking out to his song, and he sees this girl that he thinks is cute in the audience, and he just pulls her up on stage, and she happened to be the girl that was cast in the role for that video.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and this was probably a good 6 or 7 years before Friends came out.
I feel like this was like 1984, 85-ish.
Well, didn't you say the date on the song?
No.
Oh, okay.
I just said before she was famous.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
was. I would figure that maybe one of you would know about the time Dancing in the Dark came out.
Well, the first episode, I know the first episode's Friends came out in 93.
Yeah.
I'd say it was more like 7 or 8 years.
Okay, yeah. But it was a while before then, for sure.
I mean, find out. Released 1984.
There you go.
Boom!
All right, your last question in the round is in publications.
Okay.
Publications.
Within 2 years, what year did Rolling Stone magazine begin publication?
I'm not going to go between 7 and 15 here.
1907?
She said within two.
Yeah, I was thinking about it. I'm like, should I move this question?
I recall seeing a question about who was on the cover of the first one recently. It might have been on our Facebook group. I'm locked in.
So, Rand, any ideas?
Well, I'm trying to think of what is the earliest interview that I've ever heard quoted from the Rolling Stones. Were the Beatles ever interviewed by the Rolling Stones? I don't think so, but I really don't have any solid idea here.
I had a couple thought processes on this. First off, there's a movie quite a few years ago that Cameron Crowe did called Almost Famous, where it was the rise and fall of an American rock band, and that was set in 1973. And the Rolling Stone magazine was the one that commissioned the young kid that was going to go on the road with them to do the article. And then the other part of me also goes, I think it was a couple of years ago, like between the last 5 years ago, that they celebrated their 50th anniversary. And so, so 73 was 43 years ago. So, okay, so I get that part of it. That kind of makes sense. And if it was within the last 5 years that it was 50, so, I mean, so let's say that would be like 65, I want to say.
65, 66, yeah, something in the vicinity.
So what are you thinking about answering, like, I mean, because I don't want to go any lower than 65 just because that just doesn't feel right. But you maybe do 65, and since we have the 2 years, it'll go up to 67 and as low as 63 just to be on the safe side.
Go for it.
All right.
I have no other idea.
Yeah, if you don't have the answer, the best thing to do is just try to get the most logical answer you could come out of you, and that's what I'm trying to do
exactly.
Right now. So, all right. So our answer will be 1965, locked in.
This is uncanny.
Are you the same thing? Really?
I said 1965.
Holy cow.
I figured that the 50-year anniversary felt like it was a couple of years ago, no earlier than 2013, I said to myself. And I feel like it was an older magazine, like it had been around for a while. And so I said 1965. But I wanted to get back to 63, but not go farther back.
That's exactly right, yeah.
So it was actually published, the Forbingham publication, in 1967. So
all right,
you guys
we'll take
got
it.
Right.
All
right,
yeah.
Was it the same year as the first Super Bowl?
I have no idea.
I was getting mixed up.
High five.
63 and 67 in my head. I feel like one of them is the Super Bowl, and
I
one of them.
67 was Joe Namath, like the Joe Namath thing.
We'll have to look it up at some point.
Yeah, because actually they just did the 50th anniversary or the 50th.
50th Super Bowl.
Yeah, so,
last year.
Yeah, so 67 would have been the Joe Namath Super Bowl.
So they're both starting around. Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Well, we both get that one right.
It's about time.
You know, this is funny. This is similar to the last game in that we're getting the same questions right and the same questions wrong.
Mm.
And we're actually giving the same answers on darn near all of them. So going into the third round, the score is 30-30.
All right.
All right. Getting into round three, your first category is geography.
Geography.
Oh, see, this is one of those places where I should be able to separate, but I bet Rand's better at geography than I am.
Let's hope so.
She's like, what country borders the country of Jordan to the west?
That'd close.
Awesome. That would be awesome.
In 1984, the Winter Olympics was held in a country that no longer exists. What is the name of that country?
Wow. Say it again, 84. Please.
The 1984 Winter Olympics was held in a country that no longer exists today.
Yeah.
What was the name of that country?
I love this question. Even if I don't get it right, this is a marvelous question.
Yeah, it really is. Because this is going to hurt my ego a little bit, because I love Olympics questions. That's like one of my favorite things.
I'm not a big fan of Winter Olympics, though. I don't remember those.
It's tougher.
And it's really a geography question.
Geography.
I've written one down, but I'm trying to think if there's any others that jump to mind.
No, really? It's less of a geography question, more of a history question, I think.
It's a nice combination of all three.
Yeah, it's a nice combination, yeah. Exactly.
So that's one of the reasons why it's a great question, yeah. Because there's multiple ways to approach it. I'm locked in.
Okay. All right, so I know that the Summer Olympics was in Los Angeles that year because the Russians boycotted and whatnot because of Moscow 4 years previous. The one that's coming into my mind is Czechoslovakia. I'm sorry.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah.
Anyway, but I cannot remember I don't think that country's around anymore.
No, it's not. It was separated into
Czech Republic.
The Czech Republic and Slovakia.
Yes.
And it also could be Eastern Germany, East Germany doesn't exist more. It also could be the Soviet Union, but I don't think there was a Winter Olympic in the Soviet Union that year.
No, it wasn't.
There was only like 2-3 years ago, I think, in Russia. Either Czechoslovakia or East Germany, I think. I would go probably with East Germany, but it's pure guesswork.
No, I'm right there with you because I'll be honest with you. Until you said East Germany, I was really thinking that I might be right, but I think you're right.
What are you guys going with? East Germany?
Yep. East Germany, final answer. Or locked in or whatever wording we want to use for it.
I found a country that neither of you named, which makes me feel like either I'm really good or really bad. Mm. I said Yugoslavia.
So the 1984 Olympics, or the Winter Olympics, was held in Sarajevo, which was in the former country of Yugoslavia.
Yeah!
It's now Bosnia-Herzegovina.
Yeah, you're right. Oh, man. I totally forgot about Yugoslavia.
All right. Your next category is in sports.
Sports. All right.
What is the only country to participate in every World Cup?
You and your soccer questions.
I haven't had a baseball question in probably a year.
My final had to do with baseball last time.
And don't forget about the Hall of Fame.
Which
that was within last year.
That was not.
You had to tell me how many baseball teams there were and put it in order.
That's true.
I don't remember that.
And also, do not forget the epic baseball Hall of Fame.
That was like episode 30-something.
Yeah, that was within the last year.
Barely.
Well, I also know that we had someone internationally coming in, so it's only fair.
That's true.
You know what? I thought I knew the answer, and now I'm not so sure.
Who's participated in every World Cup? That's the question.
Right. Every World Cup.
Well, let's not give Jonathan any ideas right now, so he doesn't need the help.
What was the year of the first World Cup?
Oof, 1930,
appreciate that. Thank you.
You did not have to give him that answer, by the way.
Well, she gave it to you, too. When you say participated in the World Cup, do you mean made it to the official round called the World Cup, not the preliminaries?
Mm-hmm. Not the preliminaries, like the actual, the 32 teams that come
in. Thank you. That helps to clarify. All right, I'm locked in.
Okay. Any ideas?
Okay, so my knee-jerk reaction was going to be England.
Okay.
Since England is considered to be where soccer was born. Somewhere in the 19th century, I think. Although something tells me that might be Brazil, since Brazil is also very prominent in World Cups for a long, long time.
Yeah.
So as the resident international guy, I would probably go with England, although I'm fighting myself.
Okay. Well, what I was thinking is, I was actually thinking Brazil, because what Jonathan asked was a very key point, was it wasn't just being participating within the World Cup, but it was actually making it to the round of 32. And if I remember correctly, England really hasn't had as strong of a team in the last like 15 to 20 years. And so I don't really think they've made it nearly as much. And so that's where I'd be hesitant. Whereas Brazil, they've won it quite a few times. If I had a guess by myself, I would say Brazil.
You know what? I would probably go with your answer. I mean, England was just a knee-jerk reaction for me. I think Brazil would probably be a better answer. So I would go with Brazil as well. Yeah.
All right. So we'll say Brazil, final answer, and cross our fingers.
So the very first thing that I thought of was Brazil. And I felt like that was a chalk answer and didn't really like it. And so then I went over to Europe. I thought about England, and I thought about France, thought about Germany. And then I asked the question about the time, 1930. And I thought to myself, you know, England, France, Germany probably weren't playing soccer during World War II. So I cut all of those guys out. That left me with two European countries that I thought might still be in play, which were Spain and Portugal. And Portugal, in the answers I've come up with, that's in my top three, Portugal. Then I thought to myself, Uruguay, I believe, won the first World Cup. I had started to doubt whether South American teams had participated, or if whether it was a European thing or a truly world thing, but I remembered Uruguay had been in the first World Cup, so that opened it back up to South American teams for me. And I started thinking about all of the other potential ones. And then I asked the question about, did they have to make the field of 32? And once the answer was yes, then that cut out teams like Uruguay and most of the other South American countries for me. My other top three team sitting in South America is Argentina. So Argentina and Portugal are the ones that I'm hesitant on. I think they could be right, but I didn't go with them. And I walked all the way back to my first instinct and said Brazil.
Man, you just took us for a long walk there, mister.
They've also won the World Cup the most times with 5. It is Brazil.
Yes.
Oh my God. Woo.
I also believe.
Good call, Chris. Yes. Good call.
Uruguay did win the first one, I believe.
Yes.
But I think Brazil was the one that hosted it.
Okay.
Yeah, right. I knew it wasn't in Uruguay.
Okay. I just mixed it up. That's all.
Wow, man. I really almost went in a lot of different directions there.
You took us around the world.
I would have probably, literally, if I hadn't thought of World War II, I probably would have said France.
Mm. All right. Last question in the half is in science.
Science!
Science!
What kind of animal does ambergris come from?
Spell it, please.
A-M-B-E-R-G-R-I-S.
Ambergris.
I've heard of this before.
I have not, so I'm going to be praying that Ran has.
We're going to have to pray harder.
Okay. Fair enough.
I'm locked in.
Did you write something down?
I did.
Oh, wow.
Hmm.
You did sleight of hand there. Yeah, any ideas at all?
No, I have never heard about it, but let's try to think about it. I mean, it's an animal that secretes something. I guess that the name ambergris comes from it being probably resembling amber, which is kind of a gooey, transparent-y fluid.
Okay.
I would go with some sort of an insect, but that is far as logic takes me. So, no, nothing comes to mind. So your guess is probably as good as mine, I think.
Well, I mean, I was going to ask what your favorite bug was, if you thought it was an insect. So, because I really have no idea. This is one I would usually give up and not give an answer. And I think since I have
maybe
your expertness.
Maybe a sort of spider, maybe, or a beetle.
Is it itty bitsy?
Nice. Don't listen to him.
Itsy bitsy spider secreted ambergris.
I'm trying to find something to throw at him. That looks heavy enough.
No, it's pointy.
Yeah,
So I just want to throw an answer out there. I mean,
yeah, go ahead and throw something out there.
Penguins.
All right.
I don't know why. Greece. It's winter. It's cold in Antarctica. Greece.
Okay. Penguins, final answer.
So this is something I have heard of it, and it's something that I have read, not heard spoken out loud, because in my head it was pronounced ambergris. Mm-hmm. That's why I asked you to spell it. The sensation that I got with it is that it's kind of like an oil, and I wrote down whale. I think it could be something like that comes with the blubber in a whale, something like that. So I said whale.
Well, if that's the case, then penguin's a lot closer than I thought.
So ambergris was actually used as a perfume ingredient for a long time, and it does come from whales.
Wow.
Yeah! Woo!
Man.
Wow, that was a good one.
Yeah. Jonathan has no problem showing his emotion, by the way.
That was a tough question.
It was not easy.
Yes, it was.
All right. So going into the halftime question, it is 60 for Jonathan to 40 for Chris and Ryan.
Wow.
All right. We got some catching up to do in the second
good
half.
Push.
All right. So your midpoint is in movies. This is adjusted for inflation.
Oh.
Name 4 out of the 5 top grossing Will Smith movies.
And it is adjusted
it
for inflation?
It is adjusted for inflation.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Mm. 4 of the 5 top-grossing Will Smith movies.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. All right, I'm locked in.
Okay.
Okay.
So, how familiar are you with Will Smith? Because I've got a few ideas, and then I've got a few others, so...
I mean, Independence Day has got to be inside there, right?
Yep, that's the first one I wrote down.
Men in Black... 1 and 2, I would guess.
Yeah, I wrote down the first one for sure.
I think the second one was also rather successful, I think. And there was one which I forgot the name, but it was about zombies.
Yeah, that's the one I've been trying to think of the name of, too. And it was based off of a graphic novel. And I'm having a hard time remembering what the name is of it, because I really didn't like the movie. Because, again, not a zombie fan. Well, the other one I have written down is Bad Boys, and so
Bad Boys, yeah.
Michael Bay.
It was also in I, Robot, which I think was a failure.
Yep.
Hitch, maybe, or Hitchcock,
actually,
or no Hitchcock.
You know, Hancock. Actually, Hitch is an interesting answer because that was like one of his most successful movies, so I wouldn't mind putting that answer on there. I know, like. Wild Wild West was like a failure. And also, if you ever are a big Kevin Smith fan, just read about his recollections on Superman and the Spider and Wild Wild West, and it's just hilarious. Jonathan's chuckling because he knows what I'm talking about.
I actually listened to that song yesterday.
Look at that. It's a big effing spider.
So, what is that zombie movie? Crud. Because I mean, it was the saddest movie because everybody dies in it. His family dies in it. His dog died in it.
It's rare that I know the name of a movie that you don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, it's not that I don't know it. It's just I'm just trying to remember it.
I
That's
had to
all.
Stop the movie after the dog dying part.
Oh,
I get that.
I can't deal with deaths of animals.
Yeah.
The whole world dying didn't bother you, but that dog.
That's how I am with every movie. I'm like, oh, that guy got shot. Hey, who kicked the dog?
What was the name? Was it something with the city? I think it was in New York.
Gee, I cannot believe I can't remember the stupid movie's name.
So let's see. We've got Independence Day, Bad Boys, Men in Black,
and then Hitch.
Yeah. Which is
so,
4.
Yeah, so we can...
So technically, if we say those 4, we're clear in the clear.
Yeah, we can lock those in, and I would be okay with all of them.
I said Independence Day... Men in Black 2, and Hancock.
Okay.
And you were thinking of I Am Legend.
I Am Legend. Dadgummit.
Oh, right,
yeah.
Right. I Am Legend.
Just had I, Robot, and I Am Legend.
I Am Robot.
Legend.
So I, Robot was actually number 10.
Okay.
Bad Boys was actually number 14.
Oh, wow.
Hitch was number 6.
Boys.
Jeez.
So at number 1, it is Independence Day with $599 million. Men in Black is number 2 with $472 million. I Am Legend is number 3 with 318 million.
I thought about it. I didn't think it made that much money.
Men in Black 2 is at number 4 with 283 million.
Dadgummit.
And number 5 is Hancock with 274 million.
I got all 4 of them.
You got all 4?
Yep, yes. He got all 4. The only one he didn't name was I Am Legend.
Okay.
Okay, so going into round 4, down Jonathan has extended his lead. It is 80 to 50.
He's a little too giddy about this.
It's nice to be winning again. It's been a while.
Okay, now we're killing it. Now we're getting serious now.
Hey, guys, before we go on to the fourth round, it's time to talk a little bit about Audible. As you know, Audible is a sponsor of Trivial Warfare, and you can get a great free audiobook and a free month of Audible over at audibletrial.com/TWA. You know, I always try and recommend a book. So this week, I have a book that I think that a lot of you will enjoy. This is especially for comic book fans. It's called Marvel Comics, The Untold History. This is by Sean Howe. This is a book I read in paper, and it really gives a detailed behind-the-scenes look at what was happening at Marvel Comics from the very beginning until pretty recently in the modern day. You really get a sense for why certain things weren't what you had always hoped they would be. It really gives you a good picture of what was happening behind the scenes that either drove things forward or kept things from moving forward. So you're going to hear stories, obviously stories about Jack Kirby and Stan Lee. You're going to hear about Jim Shooter. You're going to hear about Neil Gaiman and all of the other stuff that you might have wondered why certain things went down the way they did. This is the book that tells you that. So if you want to try Marvel Comics, The Untold Story for free, head over to audibletrial.com/TWA. And get it as your free audiobook when you sign up for a subscription. All right, guys, let's get back to the game. Round 4.
The category is, here, drink this.
Oh, great. No. I bet I have a 50-50 on what this question is, by the way.
Alice in Wonderland?
No. Oh,
okay.
What is the primary component of sake?
That was not it. I thought you were going with Socrates Hemlock.
Oh, no.
Okay.
The primary component
of sake? Of sake. Like, what's it made out of?
I'm locked in.
Okay. I don't drink at all, but I believe the answer is rice, because isn't sake also known as rice wine?
Yes, you're right. That's the answer. Right. Okay. Rice.
Rice, final answer.
Rice, baby.
It is rice.
Man, I got an alcohol question right. This is crazy.
And the reason I wrote it as, here, question, drink this, was that's how sake was introduced to me. It's like, here, drink this.
Drink this.
Oh, wow.
Rice wine. It's Weiss-Rhein.
Weiss-Rhein. All right. Your next category is in sports.
Liquid sushi.
Liquid sushi. Liquid volcano sushi.
That's funny.
What sport is also known as free fall parachuting?
Free fall parachuting.
I'm locked in.
Really? Wow. And you did it pretty quickly, too.
Yes.
Okay. I think free fall parachuting is dropping.
Free fall parachuting.
It's a bird. It's a plane. It's free fall parachuting. Uh-huh.
I mean, I don't
know. Is there any other name in English for the sport where you jump out of a plane and, you know, open your chute only after 60 seconds?
Well, I mean,
skydiving?
Skydiving, but. I mean, I'm happy to go with that answer because I don't have anything else. You want to go with that?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, exactly. Liquor wounds and keep going. Skydiving, final answer.
I said base jumping, which is similar to skydiving, except you actually jump off of something, let yourself fall for a bit, and then open the parachute.
It's more extreme. Base jumping is more extreme.
Really? Interesting. Yeah.
The answer is skydiving.
Nice. Yes.
See, wouldn't have called skydiving
actually
a sport.
Base jumping.
I don't call it.
You've got only
base,
like
yeah,
a few seconds to open
yeah
shoot.
Yeah, definitely.
But is base
I know
jumping
base jumping is considered an extreme sport. I didn't realize skydiving was.
All right. Your last category in the round is in television.
Televisiones.
In what animated television show will you find the characters Momo, Sokka, and Ty Lee?
We call Rambo Momo.
Well, he's not an animated cat.
I took a Prisma picture of him, and he was pretty animated.
He was beautiful. He's beautiful anyway. He's a beautiful cat.
Momo.
What's the names again?
Sokka and Ty Lee.
Momo, Sokka, and Ty Lee.
Okay, Ran, if you trust me, I'm going to lock in because I know the answer.
Oh, okay, go for it. Yeah.
Okay, we're locked in. This is where Chris chokes up on the bat and just boom.
I've never heard these things before, but there's three names. Could be the Powerpuff Girls. There was three of them, but I thought they had cutesy names, so that doesn't feel right. It sounds Asian. It sounds like maybe something that could have been like Hello Kitty or something like that, but I don't know that they have an animated TV show. I'm trying to think of other, like, Pokemons and Dragon Ball Zs. There's a lot of Japanese-based animation. I don't know the answer to this. I'm going to say the Powerpuff Girls, but I'm pretty sure that's wrong.
Okay.
Christopher?
Our answer is Avatar: The Last Airbender.
So the Powerpuff Girls' names are Bubbles, Blossom, and Buttercup.
I thought one of them was named Bubbles.
Yeah. So, but this is one of my very favorite shows ever, Avatar: The Last Airbender.
Yes.
Well, this Woo! Round has gone to pot for me.
High five.
And I'll be honest with you, I love that cartoon also.
I rewatch the series about once a year.
Yeah, no, and I get that completely.
And I'm almost done with it right now. And I've started watching it like two weeks ago.
It's so well written, so well done. And then also Mark Hamill plays the ultimate bad guy in it. And so it's just great.
Where do you guys have the time to watch these things?
Priorities.
I do other things while it's on.
Did you say priorities? All right. Going into round five, score is 90 to 80. The lead has been cut. Jonathan still has it, though.
All right.
All right, let's get into round five. Your category is history. What Asian country had the first ever female head of state in the modern world?
Wow. Interesting.
I'm locked in.
All right. So, Rand, I have an idea, but I'd like to hear from you first. Yeah.
My guess was India's Indira Gandhi.
Oh, that's such a much better answer than I had, because I was thinking the Philippines, and I was thinking,
Philippines had, what's her name? Yeah.
Was it Imelda Marcos?
No, she was the president's wife.
But no, I love your answer.
Indira Gandhi was early, I think. She was probably in the early 80s or in something like that. It was quite a long time ago. So
okay, so I'm good with that. If you're good with it, all right. So Gandhi's our final answer.
That's not going to be right.
Oh, sorry, India. Sorry.
No, he said final answer. He's locked in right there, buddy.
Really?
No.
Don't be that guy, Jonathan.
You both like really? No, I'm kidding. For God's sakes. Whenever two people look at you and say, really, always deny it. Whatever you've just said is terrible. Back away. I said India.
So in 1960, it was the person's name was Siromavo Bandaranaike.
Was it Pakistan? Was in,
she was Sri Lanka.
Oh, wow. Oh. Man,
Sri Lanka.
No,
in 1960.
I would never thought about Sri Lanka.
Yes, that pain that we feel on top of our head is Carmela dropping knowledge on us.
That's the kind of pain that just slides off though; it doesn't make its way in.
Oh man! Wow.
I won't remember her name.
That's really intense.
I might remember. I get remember the country. Again. I might remember the country.
All right, your next category is literature.
Literature.
In The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, what is the name of the famous drink invented by Zaphod Beeblebrox?
Ooh, I should know that.
Do you like that? Do you like that story?
Yeah, I love
Hitchhiker's Guide.
Yeah, anytime you ask for a Hitchhiker's Guide question, that's a slow pitch softball for Jonathan.
It should be for you too.
It's not. I've only read the series one time.
We've mentioned this on the show before. I'm locked in.
I enjoyed it, but I did not enjoy it to the extent that my friend has enjoyed it, so.
Oh, I don't know the name. I know what the I know the drink.
Well, that's good.
Let me think. I mean, in the book, it says that it's such powerful drink that there's all kinds of superlatives for. I don't remember the exact superlatives, but it's supposed to be a very, very hard drink. So, I think it's something exploding something. Poof. I don't remember the name.
You think the name is Poof?
Any idea, Chris?
No, I'm so sorry. I really don't. I mean, again, this was a book series I read once and just, I mean, I liked it, but it wasn't anything that, didn't speak to me like it has the people in this room.
So I've got no real idea, so I would go with probably Exploding Sun. I don't know.
Okay. Exploding Sun, final answer.
It is the Pangalactic Gargle Blaster.
Gargle Blaster. No. Rand knew it.
Oh, man.
He said he knew it. That's right.
He said he knew it.
All right. Last category.
It had a blaster in it, so you were close to exploding.
Yeah, it was something very explosive.
That's right.
Your last category in the round is in geography.
Geography.
The territory known as Prussia is now part of what country?
I wish I knew the answer to this.
I know.
I wonder this every once in a while, but I've never taken the time to go look it up. Prussia. I don't feel like I'm right, but it's probably the best I've got. So I'm locked in.
You're locked in. Okay. All right. You guys can talk.
Brian, what do you got?
I mean, it's got to be Germany. But the caveat is that actually the European geography is kind of a bit mixed up in the sense that France and Germany have exchanged several areas around the Rhine River between the world wars. So I'll go with a straight answer. I'm pretty sure that it's Germany. Since
okay.
Prussians are Germans.
All right. Sounds good. Germany.
I didn't say Germany. I felt like Germany and Prussia existed at the same time, and so they couldn't be the same place. That's why I didn't say Germany. And I was trying to go east of Germany, and I got to Poland, and I had the same problem there, where I remember Poland existing at the same time Prussia did, so I didn't feel like it could be Poland. And that pushed me all the way over to the Ukraine, so I said the Ukraine, but that's why I said I don't feel good about it.
Mm.
So the area where Prussia was in is now part of Germany.
Yes.
Yeah.
Nice job, Rand. Nice job.
Yeah. The Prussians actually fought Napoleon in the late 19th century, and they were actually instrumental in building modern-day Germany. Germany was kind of built around Prussia.
It was kind of
Bismarck. Von Bismarck. He was the head of state of Prussia. And he was the politician who actually built Germany as a state.
Going into the last round, Jonathan has 100, Rand and Chris have 90.
All right.
Anybody's ballgame.
We're still
at his footprint, or footsteps, something with his feet.
Massage?
No.
Darn.
Those things are gross.
Massages?
No, your feet.
Oh, like massages are gross? What's wrong with you?
That's mean. My feet are lovely.
Okay.
I call them Helga and Eloise.
Where'd that come from?
I don't know.
It's not Broomhilda?
No. Don't try and name my feet.
All right. Your first category in the last round is movies or, hey, it's that guy. What actor do these three movies have in common? The Talented Mr. Ripley, Cold Mountain, and Catching Fire.
I literally don't know anything about any of these.
You didn't see any of the Hunger Games movies with Catching Fire?
I saw the first one.
Mm.
I've written down my wrong answer, and I'm just hoping Chris is as bad at this as I am.
Honestly, this is... I mean, the crazy part is I've seen... Well, I've not seen Cold Mountain, even though it was an Academy Award-nominated movie.
What was it about?
A very cold mountain.
No, that sounds really boring.
I'm struggling right now. Let's
Every
see.
Day I'm struggling.
I'm going to go with
It wasn't Renée Zellweger, right? I mean,
no, because she. The reason why I say no to that is just because Catching Fire came out within the last 5 years, and there's a new Bridget Jones Diary movie that's coming out at Christmas time, and it's like her first movie that she's been in literally like 9 or 10 years. It's been all. So yeah. She kind of got tired of acting and stopped doing it. The person I want to go with is Seymour Hoffman. And the reason why I want to go with Seymour Hoffman is, one, he was in Catching Fire. And then, two, he's one of those actors that, like, kind of blends in the background on various things. And so it's a complete guess, Rand. And if you have another option, I'm happy to do it. But I want to say Seymour Hoffman. So
I've got no better option, so I'm with you.
Okay. So Seymour Hoffman is our final answer.
That's what my last date said. No better options.
So that was yesterday, right?
That was me. Oh, that's even meaner.
The time matter doesn't matter. It's not often that somebody gives a middle and last name as
their
answer.
Yeah, Philip Seymour Hoffman. Yeah, I was just thinking about that too. I was just like, well, Hoffman. Yeah, actually, we should have said Hoffman. That way, it would have been Dustin or.
Right. I think you're right. I'm not because I know anything about it, but he is the quintessential. Hey, it's that guy.
Yeah.
Guy.
Which kind of fits in with our theme of this question.
Yes. I said Woody Harrelson.
Oh, that might be the right answer. Actually, let's find out.
So, the talented Mr. Ripley and Cold Mountain have Jude Law in common.
I thought about Jude Law.
But the one who has all three in common is Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yes! We caught up! We caught up!
Wow.
Good job. I've never seen him. I thought Jude Law was the third guy.
That's right.
Jude Law
is
the third guy. Yeah. So remember when I was talking about me looking at Matt Damon movies?
Matt Damon.
That's where part of this question came from.
But I liked Woody Harrelson better as a guy who is in a lot of movies, so that's why I went with him. But as soon as you said Philip Seymour Hoffman, I thought to myself, he is the quintessential, hey, that's that guy.
Yeah.
Really is.
And that was one of the reasons why I went with that. It's just because you won't recognize him. I mean, the dude was in Twister, for goodness sakes.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, he was in Twister.
Yeah, see, he was that guy.
All right, your next category is science.
Science!
Science, please.
Man, there's a lot of science questions today. Thank God for Rand.
What is the name of the largest moon in the solar system?
The largest moon. In the solar system.
Yeah.
In our solar system?
In our solar system.
Okay. Just checking.
It's one of two for me. I've written down the one I'm going with, but I'm certain it's the other.
Ran, I have an idea, but I'm not comfortable with it. So I wrote down Titan.
It could be. It really could be. That's one of my options. It could be also Europa, Jupiter's satellite, who is rather big. It's very hard for me to place the satellites in, like, whose moon is bigger. Let's see.
Look at the size of that moon.
I've got the biggest moon.
Yeah. It's a space station.
That's no space station.
What other satellites does Jupiter have? There's Ganymede and Europa and Io and...
There's like 27, I think.
Yeah,
isn't it like 27, Carmella?
That's probably pretty close. I think there's more than that.
Saturn's Titan is pretty big.
Whatever you really think it is, I'm good with it because, again, this is not my area of expertise. So, like I said, the only reason why Titan came up is just because if you play enough trivia shows, like, sometimes questions kind of merge together, and that's the only reason why I'm thinking it. Doesn't mean that it's right, but that's the only thing I can think of.
But it is a rather good answer. And I'm not sure who is the biggest among all those moons. So why not? Let's go with Titan. Why not?
Oh, goodness. Okay, we're going with one of my answers. Crap. All right.
Science!
Titan, final answer?
All right, Jonathan?
For me, it came down to Io and Titan. And Titan means big, so I said Titan.
So, interesting enough, Titan is Saturn's biggest moon. However, this moon is bigger than the planet Mercury, and it is Ganymede.
You named it.
Oh, I knew it. I mean, I didn't think that Io would be the answer because Io is rather small, relatively.
Oh, sorry.
But I wasn't sure if it was Europa, Ganymede, or Titan, or maybe there's another one around Jupiter.
Jupiter's four biggest moons are Ganymede, Io, Europa, and Callisto.
Callisto, right.
So yeah, Io's not small. Don't make me feel bad.
But... in comparison to Ganymede, yes, it is.
Smallish.
Ganymede's big.
Smallish.
We used to call
our moon.
It's the smallest of the four Jovian moons.
We used to call it Granymede.
But I'm bummed.
Just saying, yeah, Granymede. It was old.
But you said it's the size of Mercury?
It's bigger.
It's bigger than Mercury.
Bigger than Mercury. That's crazy. And it's not even considered a planet.
Well, it's not a planet.
It's not a planet. It's a moon.
It's a space station.
You guys are jerks.
not, jerks.
All right, last question before the final is in history.
Hit the wave.
Sir Thomas More, the author of Utopia, was the Lord Chancellor for what English monarch?
By the way, Utopia, boring freaking book.
Well, that's because there was no drama. if everything's perfect, book. There's no problems.
Oh my gosh.
I actually own that book.
I had to read that for my intro to philosophy class, and oh, I just want to just plop my eyes out like olives.
I bought
olives.
It for fun.
You bought it for funsies?
When I was 16.
Wow. Did you read it?
I did.
And?
It's not as fun, but, you know, it's interesting.
She no permanent it. Brain damage.
She did come out of it with an Irish accent, though.
With no saxonia.
That's called a callback. I forgot what I'm trying to think of.
Yeah, can you repeat the question, please? Because I was thinking the same thing. I was like, how do I politely say this?
Sir Thomas More was the Lord Chancellor for what English monarch?
Man, I don't know. I've locked in my guess.
Okay.
I'm not that familiar with Utopia. I haven't read it.
You're not missing much, sir. You're not missing much at all.
Sounds so, yeah.
Ugh.
So if it was the late 1700s?
It's the late 18th century.
Late 18th century. We had, well, I don't know, my best guess is probably Charles II, but I could be wrong in like 50 to 100 years span. So.
Right. No, I gotcha. I mean, Victoria's not a bad answer, but the problem is I think, she was most of the 1800s, right? I mean.
1900. The 1800s.
Yeah. All right.
The question is, are you certain that Utopia was written not in the 19th century?
Yeah.
I mean, if it was the 19th century, so probably Victoria would be the correct guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and the two things that I'm thinking of is, like, one, when you ask trivia questions, you ask them, and maybe this is just too much game theory going into my head, but when you ask trivia questions, you ask them to where it's hard, but yet it's still recognizable people, and especially when it comes to history. And so Charles II I don't remember him having anything very memorable happening. Except for he may have been the one that lost the United States. So
he could have been the one that banished Thomas More to the Tower of London.
That's a possibility. So because my fear is that I'm a little off on the date, and it's like 1809 or something like that, and where it does fall into Victoria's era. And I almost want to go Victoria because that just seems like a better trivia question answer, if that makes any sense. And again, I may be reading way too much into this.
Let's go with Queen Victoria.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right. Yeah. Victoria
is our
locked-in answer.
It's really weird. If you're right about the date, then I would have thought you would have gone with George III. I mean, you've been listening to Hamilton.
Oh, my gosh.
He's a character in your play. So if you're right about the date, then George III's the answer, and I missed it. I thought Utopia was like 1500s. I might be totally crazy. I'm probably totally crazy. And then my answer doesn't have anything to do with that date because I don't know who the monarchs
were
at
Henry,
that time.
Which Henry did you say?
I said Richard III.
Oh, Richard. Okay.
So Utopia was written in the 1400s.
Oh, crap.
Okay, I was closer than you were.
Way.
And this Thomas More was eventually tried for treason and executed on this monarch's command. It was Henry VIII.
It was the 8th? Are you serious?
Henry VIII.
No, doggone.
That, of course, it always ends up being the jerk.
Well, it's more than that. You were so right with how you described it. In a history question, it's usually going to fall back to somebody who's recognizable.
Familiar.
Yeah.
Henry VIII, dude.
Yep.
Oh,
that jerk.
Well, gentlemen, we have a fun little situation here.
We are tied.
We are going into the final question in a tie. 100 to 100. Was Thomas More the guy who gave Henry VIII such a hard time for breaking up the Church of England, saying, hey, Pope, I don't like what you're doing, not letting me get divorces, and I'm going to create the Church of England instead? Is that why Thomas More got in trouble?
He stepped down from being Lord Chancellor, and he did not come to the coronation of Queen Anne, though he did write in and gave support, but Henry took that as a slight that he did not attend. And then eventually he was tried for treason.
So it was about that situation. Doggone. Okay. So it's 100 to 100.
Wow.
You know our tiebreaker rules, gentlemen.
Rochambeau.
If we finish the game with a tie game, we go to rock, paper, scissors, best two out of three.
Lizard Spock.
To determine the winner. Just keep that in mind. We do have a tiebreaker scenario. Okay, what is our final question category, Carmella?
It's in geography.
Oh, crap.
Oh, boy.
Here we go, kids.
Here we go. So okay. I've got my wager written down.
In my personal character, I'm a risk taker, so I would probably bet the whole 100 points on that question. Oh,
all right. You know what? I'm actually okay. For some reason, I'm okay with that this time around. It's interesting. I mean,
you're trusting Rand.
I really am. I'm trusting my partner. So, all right. So, you want to bet the farm?
Yeah, go for it. Let's make it interesting.
Okay.
All right. You guys ready?
Are you locked in with that? What's funny is Chris understands that he has rendered my wager irrelevant with this bet because he knows that I would never, ever bet the farm ever on anything.
No.
And so regardless of what I bet, if they get it right, they're going to win. And if they get it wrong, they're going to lose.
We're locked in.
Yeah. All right. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Put these cities of the world in order from most northern to most southern. Istanbul.
Constantinople.
Toronto. Athens. And Bucharest.
Ah, okay. Not so easy.
Bucharest is the one that makes you laugh.
Hold on. And we're talking about Athens, Greece, not Athens, Georgia,
yes,
correct?
So Istanbul, okay. Turkey, Toronto, Canada, Athens, Greece, and Bucharest, Romania.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful.
You're just going to sit back and enjoy this, aren't you?
Why is Bucharest making you laugh?
No, it's not Bucharest. It's the fact that these countries are far apart. And so it makes it harder to get it right. And you just kept naming ones that are even less and less familiar to people. So it's wonderful. It's wonderful.
At least Jonathan's sweating this a little bit.
I'm just trying to get it right. But like I said, my answer means nothing in this game anymore.
Yeah, I hear you.
All right, I'm locked in.
All right, Ram, this is all about you, my friend. All about you.
Okay, so I'm thinking out loud. So obviously Toronto and Bucharest are the northern cities, and Istanbul and Athens are the southern ones.
Yep, I was
saying
the
same thing. So now it's a question of mostly Toronto and Bucharest are kind of difficult since they are so far apart. So it's always relatively hard to make out, but I've been to Bucharest, and it's kind of the middle of Europe. And I'm guessing that Toronto, being Canadian, is closer to the North Pole than Bucharest. So my guess is that Toronto is first, then Bucharest.
Okay.
And then there's Istanbul and Athens, and I'm not 100% certain, but I would guess that Istanbul is northest and Athens is the southernmost capital. So that makes it Toronto, Bucharest, Istanbul, and Athens. Unless, Chris, you remember something else.
And you said Toronto, Bucharest, Istanbul, Athens. The only thing I want to mention to you about Toronto is very close to the state of New York, and New York is not not nearly as north as most people think it is. I mean, as a matter of fact, Boston's more north than New York is, and so does that change your answer at all?
It might. That's the weakest point. So.
The funny part is Jonathan's Bucharest. Actually been to Toronto. You've been to Bucharest. I've been to none of them.
You've been to Athens, Georgia.
You've been to Athens, Georgia. That's a good point. I've been to Athens.
Let's see. York has got to be, I think, in about the same latitude
as London is, if I remember correctly.
I think London. It's got to be – York gets snow in the winters, so it's pretty north.
Yeah.
And Bucharest is not the most northern city in Europe. It is rather in the central area of Europe.
Okay, I'm liking this.
So I'm still guessing that Toronto should be more to the north than Bucharest.
Okay. All right. You know what? Let's do it. I'm okay with that. So, and I'm going to clarify with him first before I say it's locked in. So again, it's Toronto 1, Bucharest 2, Istanbul 3, Athens 4. We're locked in.
All right.
If I knew what you knew, Ran, I would have a different answer than what I have, but I would also have a different answer than what you have.
Oh, you have the same answer?
No.
Oh, I was going to say, that's about right. We've had the same answer about the whole time.
So Toronto and New York, I feel like, are on the same latitude as the Mediterranean Sea. The states, even though the weather seems similar between New England and England, England is actually pretty doggone far north. And most of the New England states are more on a parallel with like Spain, which kind of dips down below most of normal Europe. So if I had had your knowledge, I would have said Bucharest was number one and maybe Athens 2, possibly Toronto 2, and then the other Athens were Toronto and then Istanbul last. But I didn't. I said Toronto 1, Athens 2, Bucharest 3. I thought Romania was further south than Turkey, and Istanbul 4. So I'm pretty sure I'm wrong.
Yeah.
At 44 degrees north, Bucharest. At 43 degrees north, Toronto.
Oh, man.
At 41 degrees north, Istanbul.
Oh, Istanbul's higher than Athens?
And at 37 degrees north, Athens. So wow. You guys just had the first two flipped.
Oh, I got it wrong. Toronto and Bucharest, man. I messed it up.
Yeah, that's all right, man.
If you ever look at a map and pay attention to the latitude, the U.S. fits really oddly with Europe. It
is
not.
I think New York City is actually on the same kind of length as Paris, France.
Oh, interesting.
I would have thought lower than that, actually.
No, I think it's in line with France.
It's possible.
Man.
So we lost the farm.
We lost the farm.
But you were so close.
And the cows.
You also lost the chickens and the donkey.
But you get to keep the goat.
Oh, okay. You've won a goat.
The only problem is the goat is
all
me.
All or nothing, and we now have nothing.
Mm-hmm. And so, Jonathan, how much did you bet?
I bet nothing.
Yeah.
And here's why, Chris.
I
knew this was going to be a hard question, and I wasn't sure if you guys were going to bet, but a part of me really wanted to have that tie and to knock in a rock, paper, scissors tiebreaker.
I was thinking the same thing, too.
I was going to have fun with that. I thought that would be a cool moment. So I figured you'd be with me and bet zero, but you didn't, and now you're a loser.
I trusted my partner, man. I stand by my trust.
Even
the Canadians. They should have put Toronto farther north.
Yes, it's my fault. Toronto should have been more north.
He said they should have put it more north. That's brilliant. Oh, that is so good. Okay, so
that was a close episode, though.
That was a wonderful episode. Okay, so the final score: Jonathan 100, Chris and Ran 0.
Man,
you took a risk. You got burned. You flew too close to the sun.
Yep, we are Icarus,
and you got burned, son. You got burned.
We drank the Pangalactic Gurgle Blaster.
You were one Pangalactic Gurgle Blaster away from winning, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Oh. Mm. So we have a Warhead of the Week today.
Excellent.
Can you guess who it might be?
I think it might be Ran.
I think it might be Ran Levy, our Warhead of the Week. Ran, thank you so much for joining us. Can you tell everybody where they can find your show?
Chosen.
Be glad to. CMPod.net. Search for Curious Minds Podcast.
So if you want to go to the website at cmpods.net, I'm pretty sure if you search the word curious on iTunes, that'll be one of the first ones that pops up. If you type Curious Minds, you'll definitely find it. So go check out his show. I listen to it. And I find it quite enjoyable.
Absolutely.
So
thank you very much.
Absolutely. We also have a couple of iTunes reviews to read this week.
Okay.
Let's go ahead and do that. We have an update on an iTunes review. Who had done an iTunes review has come in and updated it.
Ooh, fancy.
So this is actually our friend John Finn.
John.
Yay, John.
He goes under the name Scal Ewag. And John says, it's been a year since my review of the podcast, and it still holds true. Since then, I've listened to every episode, some multiple times, like my favorite episode, Trivial Warfare number 28, which happened to be the All Comics episode.
Which John was on, as a matter of fact.
It's funny that that's his favorite, isn't
Intriguing.
It? The production value is top-notch. I still get excited when I hear and sing along with Warming Up Chris, and I'm also part of the Facebook group and am amazed by the intelligence of the people on there. Keep it up, Jonathan and Chris, as well as the First Lady and the rest of the regulars. Thank you, John. We appreciate
Thanks, John.
You.
Yes, John Finn. Thank you.
We also had a review from Tom Azz. T-O-M-A-Z-Z.
Oh, dear.
Yes. Tom says, my biggest complaint with this podcast is that I didn't find it sooner and not enough episodes. I can't recommend this podcast highly enough. Subscribe now.
Thank you, Tom. Awesomeness. Thanks.
Thank you, Tom. And then one more. This is the last one that I can read because I've run out.
Oh, dear.
Okay, so there's no more words. Need some new words, people.
The hurry to 100.
The hike to 100. We're at 86. Oh, this is from Brian in Cary, North Carolina. I love the show. Listen to it regularly on my weekly long runs. I can usually answer the history, geography, science questions, but everything else is a challenge. The Warming Up Chris question and final questions are always a lot of fun. Highly recommend the show.
Very nice.
Thank you, guys. We appreciate your reviews.
Thank you.
You make our day.
Really do.
And let me see. Is there anything else we need to cover? We want to give a shout out to Liberty Bakery.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much.
Liberty Bakery. Chris did a special order of snickerdoodles.
Snickerdoodles,
yes.
Snicker.
And some triple chocolate chip cookies today.
Triple threat chocolate chip cookies.
So we've been indulging in those today. And let me tell you guys, amazing. So if you're in Jacksonville, Florida, looking for a bakery, try Liberty Bakery. We love them.
Yes. Trivial Warfare approved.
You think they'll send over some cookies to Israel?
Hey.
I've tried.
I tell you what, man. If you could get some, those snickerdoodles, it's like there's a stick of butter in every snickerdoodle. They're amazing.
Hey, it sounds good. Send Jonathan your address. We'll see what we can do for you.
I am not shipping cookies, dude.
I would.
I'll do it. He did your show for
Carmella.
You.
Carmella will ship you cookies. All right. Before we get out of here, I do want to do a Patreon update. So we have two new promotions in the Trivial Warfare Army this week. We have Smitty Scoop, who is a new captain in the Trivial Warfare Army, donating $10 a month. Thank you for getting on board, Smitty. I appreciate it, man. And we also have Nicholas John, two first names, always a crowd pleaser. And Nicholas is a new major. That's right. We have another major. You're pairing with Richard Little as the only two majors so far. Nicholas, I really appreciate it, man. Thank you so much for signing up to donate. I look forward to having you on at some point here. And if anybody else wants to get in on the action, be sure to head over to patreon.com/TWA to sign up. All right, guys. Thank you so much. Chris, why don't you go ahead and get us out of here?
All right. Well, Ryan, thank you very much for your time and everything. And again, we look forward to hearing more from you and Curious Minds. So thank you very much for being my partner today.
Thank you very much. I'm very sorry for the loss.
Hey. You lost him the game, Ryan.
You have nothing to be sorry for.
It was so much fun, guys. Yeah. I had a great time.
Awesome. To us, that's the important part, is we're here for the fun,
that's
for sure.
So fun.
And besides, we had to give Jonathan a bone one of these days. It's about time he wants something.
Keep your bone away from me, Chris.
Whoa.
He gave him a good fight.
So, absolutely. So, Carmella, great job with the questions.
Thanks.
Thank you very much for doing that. Jonathan, another one for Jonathan. You can't say it very often.
I don't
often.
Think we can say it anymore, no, man. Right. It's like, thank God, a win for Jonathan.
If you need to get a hold of Jonathan, you can email him at trivialwarfare@gmail.com. Again, that's trivialwarfare@gmail.com. If you have a Warm It Up Chris question, you can email me at warmitupchris@yahoo.com. Again, that's warmitupchris, all one word, @yahoo.com. And until next time, that's Rand, that's Jonathan, that's the First Lady, and this is Chris. And we are Trivial Warfare, where it's not just trivia, it's war. Take care, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Trivial Warfare. To learn more about the show and become a warhead yourself, visit TrivialWarfare.com. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes or in any other good podcast app. And find us on Facebook or Twitter by searching Trivial Warfare.
Well, you know there's people that actually jump out of planes in iron, and it's called extreme ironing.
No.
Yeah, I am not joking.
Come on.
No, check it out when you get when the show's over.
I will not.
Google extreme irony.
I would rather be wrong than gullible.
Okay, if everybody that listens to the show, go onto the Facebook page and give Jonathan your favorite extreme ironing pictures.
They'd all be fake.
Hey, you never know. Come on.
I wonder if you've been sucked in by something that is so fake and you believe it's so real.
Look, I could see Jeffrey Sigurdsson doing extreme ironing, all right? Jumping out of a plane and just ironing stuff like that.
Jeffrey,
I don't
let him talk
this
for
about you. I do not believe this about
Jeffrey,
you.
Prove them wrong. Show them pictures, mister. I believe in you.
Go do it with a Trivial Warfare shirt on.
And ironing the Trivial Warfare shirt. Yes.